What's up, Fungal Associates, and Happy New Year! Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson.
You're sitting here with the other host, Casey Clapp. Alex Croson, Happy New Year. We made it.
We made it to the new year?
Yeah, we did.
We did. Everybody's still alive and kicking and talking about trees.
Yeah, pretty much right. And this is an exciting year. This is our first episode of the new year, which I had to admit to you last, I guess it wasn't even last week, it was yesterday.
Last year.
On our Patreon episode.
Yes.
That I prefer to see the new year as actually the solstice.
Right.
It feels like a good actual break, you know? So the more I think about it, the more new year is kind of arbitrary. It's the arbitrary, like, why didn't we line the months up?
It's just a little bit off.
Yeah, know? why is it just a little bit off? Why can't we have like just make that, you know, like daylight savings time is just an arbitrary thing. There was a whole Radiolab about the entire idea of time.
Yeah.
Did you ever listen to that?
No.
Oh my God, Alex, you got to listen to it.
Of course.
It's all about how trains are what made standardized time around the entire world a thing.
Oh, wow.
Because every little city would just be like, yeah, it's noon when the sun's at the top. Done. They would end it there. But then if you were on a train going from Chicago to Denver, then the train would need to know what time its schedule gets to each spot.
Right.
And so it couldn't just say, yeah, about noon on this day, because that would be maybe an hour later or an hour before.
See, that doesn't seem that interesting to me for some reason.
Okay, that's fair. But, you know, the whole point here is that...
So rude, Alex.
It's very rude. But you know what? I get this a lot, actually. You'd be surprised how many people, Alex, are uninterested in what we have to say about trees.
Casey, I invented people not being interested in what I have to say.
That is
please.
True. Okay, fair. So my point being, if we would just arbitrarily, I don't know, do we have to have a bill in Congress to just move New Year's Day?
Why not just you can just live over this way if you want, and everybody else can live the way they want.
So,
why does it have to be a federal law?
Well, that way everyone can live with me. Like, I guess I want validation is all.
Well, that's on you, my man.
Damn it. Okay. But couldn't you? Okay, so maybe next year that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have a solstice and I'm going to stay up till 12 p.m. and drink a bunch of champagne.
On the 21st.
On the 21st of the month.
Right.
Of December. And then after that, do all the rest of the hullabaloo for the holidays. And then on the 1st, on the 31st, I'm just going to be like, why is everyone going crazy right now? What's the big deal?
People are going to love that.
I'm just going to completely ignore that it exists.
Be that guy that's like, you know, really you should be celebrating on the 21st as you're alone in your home. Everybody else is out partying.
Oh, that sounds so great.
But they're the losers.
Yeah, because I'm going to wake up the next day and be like, you guys, it's all the same. Yeah. You're fools. You're sheep.
These people who are like, why does everybody act like the new year means anything? I'm like, shut the fuck up.
That's going to be me. Anyway, sorry, I was a little off topic.
That's okay. Hey, and it's very appropriate that we start our year with a big off topic rant about time.
Yeah, that is fair. Thanks for listening, Alex.
So, Casey, one thing this new year is you have a new microphone.
I do. This is my standard SD1 mic that I can talk into that's very heavy.
Yes, it's a universal audio dynamic standard SD1.
Yeah, so I can talk from here or here or here.
That's not quite.
Or here.
Yeah, there is good.
Or here. Or here.
Yeah, it's different tonal qualities, I guess.
Yeah, so my last mic, which we still have, it was Shure.
No, it's like a Samson USB mic.
Yes, yeah. That got me started doing this. It was so good.
Someday it's gonna be in a glass box on a pedestal.
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna sell it at a Sullaby's auction for some crazy amount.
It'll be on your Nike campus.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
How they have the first shoe.
Yeah, totally. Great. I'm excited about that.
We're getting used to this, like because you have been muscle memory trained for 2 years.
Yeah.
To speak at a certain length away from your microphone.
Yeah, I've been trying to, if I could feel the hairs of my facial hair wipe on the cover.
Yeah.
I was doing good.
Right. This is a different situation. You got to get used to this new distance.
I got to grow my facial hair out is what I'm hearing.
And yes, definitely. Yeah, Fu Manchu is preferred.
I got to get a Fu Manchu. It's just for my technical abilities on the mic. Okay, guys.
And yesterday I realized that I have to make a new EQ preset for you because you're on a new microphone. It was really fun. And I got it all dialed in. I was like, damn, that sounds good.
Damn, listen to that guy.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for making me sound good.
Sound a little less boomy now.
Yes.
So apologies to all those people who loved our boominess.
And who loved my boominess. It was bombastic and boomy Casey.
Casey, a happy new year to you and a happy new tree.
Yes.
That we get to talk about today. And that tree is the red maple. Boo,
hiss. Oh, come on, guys. Come on. Stop. Quiet down.
Tomato.
Quiet down. Yes, we're doing the red maple. And I personally think this is a great tree to start out the new year with.
Okay. On a bit of a down note.
Yeah.
I've heard tell that people don't like this tree. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah. You've heard through the ether of its, less than stellar qualities or its great qualities.
Right. I sort of equate it to like is the Crimson King a red maple?
No. The Crimson King is a... Yes, Crimson King. There's a Crimson King and a Crimson Queen.
Oh.
The King is a Norway maple.
Norway
maple. The Queen
maple.
Is a Japanese maple.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that... In the same way people don't like Norway maples, people don't like red maples.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Yeah. And that is you know what, Alex, you're right. I'm sorry in advance to everybody who's out there listening to this or for everyone who's excited because it's kind of like the Starbucks of trees.
I see. There's one on every corner.
There's one on every goddamn corner. There is one everywhere you didn't expect it to be, where you wanted there to be a way cooler coffee shop. It's a Starbucks.
You know what's funny? When I Google red maple and go to Google Images, I would say 85% of the images here
have a Starbucks in them.
Are of a red maple in front of a suburban home.
Yes. Oh my God. That's when we talked about the suburbs trees.
Yeah.
The quintessential tree to be planted in the middle in the front yard of everyone's house, I believe, was a red maple.
Yeah.
So it became over time this purple leaf plum, but I think the standard Levittown, what they wrote in there, was a red maple.
I see.
It is. I mean, the Starbucks, I think that's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's very popular. So you gotta you can't just hate on it. You gotta look at it from the other side of the story and be like, well, people like it. People think it's a great tree.
Right.
But maybe it's just the marketing really worked out well for this tree.
Mm.
And it's not that great of a tree, but now that people are just into it, maybe they're like, yeah, I'm into trees. So they drink red maple. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, this reminds me of a tree that would be like in a Sears catalog in the
50s. Oh my God. Yeah, it's exactly right. Did you know that like a Craftsman house is a Sears Craftsman house?
Really?
Yeah. I'm pretty positive. I didn't look up the 100% facts on this, but you could have bought a house from a Sears catalog way back in the day.
Do they deliver it already built?
No, they would deliver it, and then you'd have to hire someone just to put it together.
Wow, like IKEA furniture.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a mail order house.
And this is a mail order tree.
It's a mail order tree. And Alex, I mean that, and you just hit it so spot on the head in a literal sense.
Okay.
It's mind blowing, but there's too much to get into right off the bat. As soon as we start, you're busting.
Look at you.
I know. I'm ready to go because I have so much to talk about with this particular tree.
All right.
That I don't like. If we start too soon, it's all gonna come. You can't stop the flow. You'd say, all right, we're gonna take a break. But Alex, and then I would just keep on burrowing.
Oh, it's gonna
through.
Be one of those episodes.
It's not gonna be one.
Well,
of those
at least
episodes.
You're self-aware, Casey.
No, I'm telling you right now. Take a break now, or don't take a break ever.
Should I go pee really fast?
No. Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. You take everyone. Go get a cup of your favorite Starbucks coffee.
Wow.
And then come back because we're gonna talk about that coffee for the next 45 minutes.
Oh my God. All right. Well, hey, more on the red maple right after this. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary 2023. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary 2023. Should we have some sort of gimmick this year, Casey?
Yeah, you should. It should be like that. What is? Do you remember in? I think not Community, but Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
There were the two radio stations. One was the NPR station,
right?
And the other was like the exciting one,
the douche.
They would always put on like those sounds, like fart sounds, and
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah.
That's what we should do.
Okay, that doesn't sound annoying.
Well, you asked me, and I told you. So there you go.
Well, I'm telling you, your idea's bad.
Your idea sucks.
Casey, today we're talking about the Red Maple Acer Rubrum.
Acer Rubrum, that is right. Rubrum meaning red.
Well, there you go. Acer meaning maple.
There you go.
This is
questions out
rough
there?
To a strong start with the Red Maple. What a boring ass name.
It is. It kind of is. It's like when you first actually, you know what? It's not boring, and here's why. Everything about this tree is red. Like almost everything, except maybe the bark.
Okay.
So I think actually of most trees, it's really earned that name. Like the black pine, for instance,
uh-huh.
It's not really black. There's not a whole lot to it.
So this is a capital R red tree.
Yes. Okay. I will give it that. Of all the trees that you could call a red maple,
uh-huh.
This is the one that truly has earned the title.
Okay.
I'll give it to it.
Let's imagine, Casey, that you and I, our first stroll of the year.
Yeah, honestly, it's a beautiful day for it too, isn't it?
It is. Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think
sure.
So. Yeah, it's not raining.
No, that's true. You and I are walking through a nice suburb of Port. Hey, we're walking through the beautiful hills of Hillsboro.
Oh, beautiful! Yes,
the burrowed hills of Hillsboro.
We're walking specifically through a subdevelopment.
There we go. And we come across some red maple in somebody's front yard. Casey, let's ID this tree.
Let's begin. So the first thing you'll notice as you're walking up to this tree is it is extremely uniform in just its growth habit. It looks like the quintessential, a child drew a stick and drew a circle on top of it.
Yeah.
That's it. They did it. It's perfect. I would say that this tree ends up being a little bit more oval in shape as it gets older.
Like a tall circle.
Yeah, exactly. So the circle, it doesn't get too much wider than it is tall. So at the beginning, it is a kind of tall, skinny tree. As it grows wider and up and out, it goes from a small circle to a elongated oval.
Got it.
So you'll notice it's quite nice. It's quite uniform. It has very smooth bark when it's very young and it's not a giant tree. And you'll see that the leaves are kind of small. So it's got kind of a canopy that you walk into and you're like, okay, they're okay. Yeah, I see it. It's got some texture to it. It's got a little bit of flair, but nothing that's like, wow, that's outstanding. Like I said, it's very much that a child drew a tree with a circle on it, you know, a circle
and
on
God
stick.
Made it real.
Exactly. Yeah, this is it. This is that tree. Thank you, God. Thank you, children everywhere.
Thank you, God. Thank you, children everywhere.
Yeah, that sounds like a song that someone would write for a benefit concert in
for
the
sure,
80s.
Yeah. I was going to say a fundraiser for like a children's hospital.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same page there. So as you get closer to the tree, you'll see that it's a maple. Of course, it has leaves that are oppositely arranged along the twig. It is red. The twigs at the very beginning, when they're like the first or second year, they're red.
Hell yeah.
When the leaves come out, they're a dark red. The petioles are red and then they fade to green over the course of the kind of the springtime awakening. At the very beginning, before there are even leaves on the tree, if you get there and you start really taking a close look in, let's say, early spring, then you'll see that the buds, before they pop, are very uniform. It's actually, like, I'm going to show you this picture, and if you go to our the show notes, you'll see the link of the description of the tree.
Yeah.
The very first one. And click through those photos. Without the leaves on it, the oppositeness of the twigs is so very clear, where it looks almost like a herringbone of a fish, you know, like a scale of a fish, or not a scale, the bones of a fish.
Yeah, like the rib bones.
Exactly. And you can see one, two, one, two, one, two, one, two, just popping out exactly.
So those are oppositely arranged.
Those are oppositely arranged twigs, yeah. So everything is oppositely arranged. So of course, if you have buds that are oppositely arranged, then the leaves will be. Then that means that the branches that come from those buds will also be oppositely arranged. So the whole form of the tree is just a fractal of oppositely arranged things.
Is that true of most trees, that they're either oppositely or alternately mm-hmm. arranged? If the twigs are alternately arranged, then the buds are alternately arranged,
yes.
And the leaves are alternately arranged.
Exactly, because they all start from those buds. So whatever the buds are, the rest of everything will follow.
Right. Oh, yeah. We talked about that first.
Lead, just the apical meristem, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Of course, obviously.
And how it's just like sets a thing in motion and then hits copy, paste.
Yeah, exactly.
And does the exact same thing over and over again until the tree's big.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing that happens is sometimes a twig on the left or the right side will die for whatever reason, and then you don't have that same opposite appearance because one bud or twig or whatever on one side perished and the other did not. So then it looks like it's alternate, or it mm-hmm. looks like there's just not an opposite to it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. Perfect. Great job. Everyone out there still following along?
Yes.
Good.
A chorus of yeses.
A chorus. So you'll notice that it has these amazing little buds. If you're, again, finding it in early spring, late winter, the buds are oppositely arranged as well. They are dark red little balls. They look like they are these, like, honestly, I have to say, they look like little balls. You okay. have left and right, and you have a twig in the middle. They
become
very,
kind of
very phallic.
Casey's talking about testicles, everybody.
I'm talking about testicles.
When are you not talking about testicles?
That's a good point. Honestly, everyone, listen back with your eyes open through this entire 2 years of this podcast.
This is the ultimate sixth sense reveal.
It is, yeah.
It's all been about balls.
So it's not always like that. You have some of it at the terminal spot, and they have, but they're really interesting because they are very, very round, and they all pop out from the same spot, but you have the flower buds and the leaf buds and the vegetative buds all in the same spot.
Okay.
So it's just like you have these, like, maybe six or eight little buds all right next to each other, then a little space of a twig, and then a bunch of buds right next to each other, and then a little space, and then a bunch of buds right next to each other. Then, when they actually bloom and put out their flowers, they put out flowers with little tiny red petals and sepals, and on some branches they are pistillate flowers, and on other branches they're staminate flowers on the same tree.
That is male and female flowers.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And they're little red flowers on these little red twigs coming out of these little red buds on the end of these red maple trees. It's very nice.
I guess it's starting to feel... I understand what you mean by this thing deserves the name red maple.
Oh, yeah. It really does. And we haven't even got to really the big, intense part about why this is called that.
Should we right now?
Oh, no, because we're not even done here. As soon as those little flowers come out, they then have their fruit, those little double samaras. And the double samaras come out, they're about a 60-degree angle from each other. And they are very small, like kind of like maybe an inch entirely, maybe a little bit more, like both of them put together from tip to tip.
Okay.
And they come out really early, like before the leaves are even out. They will have been starting to come out, and then they will be dropped by the first, maybe early summer. All of their samaras have dropped away. They're red, just in case you were wondering.
So this is that the samara is the fruit of the maple,
correct?
Right?
Okay. Yeah, it's those little double helicopters that you get. Yeah.
Classic maple identification.
Exactly.
Thing.
Yeah, and they always come out in doubles for a maple. So they have these little seeds with these big wings that come out left and right, and there is like an ash tree, for instance, will have a single samara that hangs down.
Okay.
So the double samara, if you break it at the base, then you have that twisty little thing that'll fly.
Right.
That is also red. The leaves come out, they first come out and they're, you know, they have like tinges of red in them, but they're really just green leaves like anything normal. And then you go through the entire summer season, and then in the fall, oh my
Shaboom.
God, they explode. explode. They're some of the first trees to actually put out their fall color in the fall, and it is red.
Yeah.
Like the deepest crimson you can kind of imagine.
See, I think it's like, it's
maybe not deepest, the most thorough.
It's pretty, it's like they turn the saturation way up on this tree.
Oh, they do. Yeah, they really do. And some of them will actually like start to turn color and be like a little bit yellow, depending on the specific species and where it's from, if it's wild, what its genes are.
Yeah.
They can be anywhere from like a yellow orange to a very like intense ruby red.
It's pretty fucking red.
It is. Honestly, the redness of it reminds me often of the color of like a crab shell or a lobster or something.
Oh, yeah.
When you boil it and then you pull it out and it's like, whee!
Yeah.
That's what reminds me of.
Lobster red.
It's lobster red.
It's red lobster.
It's red. This is the red lobster of trees.
Wow.
Alex, at least in the fall.
Can we talk about Cheddar Bay biscuits really fast?
Yeah, we sure can.
You know, they sell them the mix in like a box.
Oh, yeah. People went so crazy for those.
Yeah.
You can, like, people have copied the recipe.
Oh,
people have done everything.
So good.
It's brilliant. They are really delicious.
Lily and I made them for Thanksgiving.
Nice.
And they were just delicious.
See, I've tried to make my own. Just like with my own recipe.
It's not the same.
I'm not as good. I'm not very good.
You need those chemicals to make it perfectly curated biscuit.
This is why we go to the Red Lobster. the bark, Alex, because we can talk about it, it's really utility bark.
Yeah, it looks fine.
Yeah, when it's young, it's very smooth and very grayish, whitish. Then as it gets older, though, it becomes way thicker, furrowed, and develops like these big plates that don't pop off. They just kind of look like you could just go over there and like, whop, 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 and just like pull them off, but they don't come off. They're very hard. They're just very tough.
Long, long plates.
Exactly. Long plates that go up the tree. Whatever. They're fine. The bark is lovely. I do like it. I have to say, the older the bark gets, the more texture and interesting patterns it develops.
Uh-huh.
And I do prefer that. I think they look nice.
This is interesting. I was just looking at a photo of the young bark, and I quite like it.
Okay, there you go.
It's so paper white. And,
it is. It's got really smooth, isn't it?
Little lenticels all over it.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
So that is how you identify this tree. There's another way you can identify this tree, Alex. You can walk out into the woods. Anywhere east of the Mississippi from Florida to Manitoba, and you can point at a tree and you can say, that's a red maple. You'll probably be right.
I see.
It's apparently the most common, according to the Forest Service, the most common tree in the eastern United States, eastern Canada, eastern North America.
Wow.
Just outright.
That's impressive.
It really is.
Is that from a like planting standpoint, or is that from a natural growth standpoint as well?
Oh my God, great question. It is a natural growth.
That's impressive.
This tree is not a tree that is used for timber or anything like that.
Yeah.
The wood's very brittle. It has, it's called a soft maple, which means essentially the wood is not hard. Generally, you have your hardwoods are your broadleaf trees.
Mm-hmm.
The wood is harder. Soft woods are conifers. The wood is generally a little bit less intense. However, those are just like these big broad categories where there's like so many exceptions to where it's kind of a pointless thing. This is one of the exceptions to the quote hard woods.
It's a hard wood with soft wood.
Yes. Gah, Alex, you get it, man. You just get it.
As I take a, you know, it's like hardwood, but soft wood.
Wow. Pass that like, Scooby snack.
It's like not deep, but I'm smoking weed, so I think it is.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly. So it's amazingly common tree naturally, but it is so good at growing anywhere all the time that it's also one of the most common trees planted anywhere.
Okay.
And this is where we really start getting into what we're going to be talking about today.
As if it needs the exposure, you know,
as
like
if it already
grows so well naturally. Oh, we got to plant it everywhere too.
Yeah. It's like putting Mark Zuckerberg on the front of some magazine. It's like, we already know he's already out there. He doesn't need any more.
It's like hiring Chris Pratt for another fucking movie.
Wow. That's hurtful.
He's famous enough.
He is famous enough.
He gets
enough,
to be everything. Just let give another actor a part.
So this is the Chris Pratt of the trees. Man, okay, so that's our third metaphor.
Red Lobster, Chris Pratt.
And Starbucks.
There you go.
There's
our episode title.
There it is. Done. So our tree today, a red maple, has been planted over in the eastern United States, over in Europe for centuries. I think it was introduced to Europe sometime in like the 1600s when like people first came over. Very likely it was like the first tree they saw. So they're like, oh, hey, okay, go red maple. Let's take it back to Europe and plant it. It grows so well. It takes soil conditions from the swamp. Like, absolutely, there's water growing. It will be like, hey, willow, what's up? And pop up right next to it. It doesn't like to be there all the time, but red maple and sweet gum, you can find them growing next to each other all the time. You cut one of them down, and it will sprout back. So they have a lot in common, these two trees, including they have very shallow roots, where if you walk downtown in Portland and you walk and you see a little tree well cut out with a tree in the middle, if that tree well is completely covered with roots, like it looks like there is a pavement of roots.
Yeah.
It's just one big giant wooden, like bumpy plaid, bumpy flat thing. All roots. You don't even need to look up. That's a red maple.
Yeah.
If not a red maple, it's a hybrid with a red maple because that's what they do.
So red maples fuck up the concrete just like sweet gum?
Yeah, totally do. They wreck it. They will often have shallow roots that will grow right underneath your pavement.
Man, what an oversight.
Oh my God. But that's the thing. In the North Carolina State University, they have a little fact sheet, which I have linked because it's a good fact sheet, except for a few things. It says, this tree is the best choice for a soft maple. It makes an excellent lawn, park, or street tree. It has some tolerance for air pollution. The light, cream-colored wood, which is known commercially as soft maple, is heavy, closed-grained, and rather weak. It's used as a pulpwood and is manufactured of furniture and woodenware.
Who's paying them, Casey?
All in one sentence, they say, this is a great tree. It's commercially not very important, but is close-grained, heavy. It's also used for all these other things. And then it says the insects, disease, and other problems. And it's like the roots can rot. It breaks in wind and ice. It has all these different different insects that get on it. It has a bunch of different things. It'll buckle nearby sidewalks. So like within like two paragraphs, it says, this is one of the best choices of a tree, and then goes down to explain why that best choice is the worst choice.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
This reads like one of those pharmaceutical commercials with a huge list of side effects.
This is the like Prilosec of yes. trees or whatever.
Ask your arborist about red maple.
Can we make a commercial about this, please?
Sure.
So at the end of the day, the red maple was planted a bunch. It grows really well in the worst conditions. What are some of the worst conditions you can think of? The tree well in a city. What else? Maybe the lawn, the front lawn that just got scraped entirely, compacted, and turned into a hellscape that now you're going to turn into a beautiful, perfect lawn.
When you say conditions, you're not talking about like climate, are you?
No, not right now.
Okay.
No,
like this can grow anywhere.
No, yeah. It, funny enough, it pretty much can, from like Florida to Manitoba, Canada.
Oh, okay.
So it can take all these different conditions. The thing is, you can't plant a Floridian maple in a Manitoba maple spot.
Or should you?
Though actually, they've done a lot of research on this because this is one of the most researched and used trees there's ever been, because it's so common and grows everywhere so well.
I see.
That they're like, well, also, it's been planted everywhere, so it's a good representation. We can use this tree for science. It's like it's a mouse of science trees.
Wow.
Everywhere has planted thousands. The city of Portland, hold on, let me do my math here. 7.1% of the total 218,602,000 trees that they inventoried at their last inventory, which was done in 2017, 2018. There are 15,475 red maples in the city of Portland, just in the street trees.
What's that total? 618,000?
218,000 trees.
Okay.
So it's 7.1% of all of the trees in the city of Portland.
And this isn't even where it grows voraciously.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the thing. This tree grows so well and has been marketed between things like what we talked about earlier, planted in all the front yards and all the street trees, where it's become ubiquitous And the growers here and in Ohio and in Pennsylvania grow thousands of them. Schmidt's Nursery. It's one of the biggest nurseries in the entire United States.
Wow.
It's banked right here in Boring, Oregon. That's where they have a lot of their things. They grow and send red maples over to the east by the truckload.
Wow.
Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands. Oh. And they grow it. They have themselves introduced thousands or at least several different cultivars. I shouldn't use thousands there. That's a little bit much. But there are... All they've done is grow some that grow a little bit taller, grow ones that are a little bit wider, grow ones that have an intense orangish yellow color,
okay,
intense red color. Let me give you some of these.
They're fine-tuning this thing in unnecessary ways, potentially.
Exactly. Okay. So there's Autumn Spire, Autumn Radiance, Autumn Flame. There's Northwood, October Glory, Red Point, Red Sunset. And it just keeps going and going and going.
This kind of harkens back to our discussion on the on the Patreon yesterday about vanilla. And there's French vanilla, vanilla bean, vanilla.
There's all these different kinds. And it's like, what is the difference?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a really good question. They've also hybridized this with the silver maple, of which it is a very close cousin, and created a whole other section, which is a tree called the Acer X Freemanii, which is the Freeman maple. But the Freeman maple is a hybrid between these two, but it has another huge amount of things. There's Armstrong, Autumn Blaze, Celebration, Sienna Glory, Sienna Glen.
So they want to make like a catalog. Here's the 1,500 different varieties you can choose from. I get analysis paralysis. This is my hack stand-up comedy. I can't even open Netflix without getting a headache. I don't know what I want to watch.
I don't know what I want to watch, so I end up just watching all the trailers go through.
That is a thing. Let's move on.
So, the big thing that you'll notice we're talking about here is the same tree everywhere all the time. To ad nauseum.
Yes.
And I wish that I could like really express the too big to failness of this tree, because it has been planted almost everywhere, even though it like will destroy so many things. And it's a boring tree for all intents and purposes, except for it gets some really nice red color. But every basic person who goes to Starbucks to get their basic coffee will want to see this basic tree. I'm sorry if I've offended anyone out there. Please keep going to Starbucks. I heart you. I'm impassioned. Therefore, I speak sometimes without knowing what I'm saying.
Wow.
This is a basic tree.
Yeah. But
because it is so planted everywhere and so easy to grow and so cheap to grow that everyone is still planting it, and it's now the tree. Whenever someone's like, "Oh, I just want to plant a maple tree," this is the tree they're thinking of.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those trees. We talked about a few of these that like its popularity was like reverse engineered.
Yeah, totally.
Just by making it really cheap and selling it fucking everywhere.
And now became, it's actually popular.
Right, yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's mind-blowing. And because of that, all the research is done on red maple, because that's the easiest tree to get for super cheap for these researchers who have no money.
Oh, wow.
And then it gets planted all over the place. And then the researchers are like, actually, this is probably the most applicable tree we could use and do research on. And then you get the self-perpetuating system, right?
So are they still learning things about the red maple? I mean, how much research can you do on one tree?
Well, it's more like they're doing things about, let's say, different soil types. So they're saying, okay, we know the red maple generally grow like this.
I see.
So if we plant them in different soil type situations or different water regimes or different, you name it.
Different fungal associates.
Yes, exactly. Then you'll be able to measure them and know and see the differences really well, because they're so well studied. So it's not necessarily that they're interested in the tree. They're interested in how the tree responds to a situation so they can make a conclusion about that situation.
In that instance, I would think that the research could be never ending. Like you could always try some new combination of something.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. Okay. Totally true. Mm. And so this brings us to our next little section here. Now that you have some kind of understanding of where this tree comes from, and you know that it is the most popular tree to be planted anywhere, then you're like, well, hold on. Let's start analyzing this a little bit. If that is the case, then this tree is everywhere. What happens if we get Dutch red maple disease?
Oh, shit.
Right? Oh, my God.
That would be, that would be something.
It would destroy right in however many much time it takes to do it, 7.1% of Portland's urban forest. And that's just the street trees. That doesn't include all of those that are in the parks, in people's front yards. It doesn't include ones that we have planted outside the city limits of Portland, in Hillsborough, Clackamas County, in any other city that hasn't done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also all the cities that have done the same thing and said, wow, yeah, actually, this is a problem. We have so many of these trees.
Well, would its cultivar diversity protect it in some way?
Yeah, potentially, but it's still kind of the same thing. The diversity is not necessarily coming from all these wild things coming in and adding this new diversity. It is only the... it's only the things that they are adding in. So they say, well, that's a really red tree, and that is a really red tree. Let's put those together. They put those together, then they breed them again with the same things to get the reddest of the reddest of the reddest.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily that there is a really good amount of diversity, because then also after that, they're going to be taking cuttings and then planting essentially clones of these trees, because that's the easiest, quickest way to propagate a tree with the same exact characteristics from the tree that you took it from.
So maybe the genetic fiddle-faddling they're doing is pretty shallow.
Yeah, it's the same kind of genetic thing that we do for anything, where, you know, to get the perfect quince and the perfect apple, the genes have to remain the same. So then if you add something new in, it changes the whole thing.
Okay.
So way back when, Alex, I did a research paper.
Yeah.
That research paper was on... conifers.
The New York Times.
Oh, it was in the New York Times. Yeah. Thank you. You can find it in www.thenewyorktimes.com.
God, that would be insane.
I have to say, unfortunately, it's not in the New York Times.
Okay.
Meanwhile, it was in a journal, I think it was like the Journal of Urban Forestry and Arboriculture. I can't really remember off the top of my head.
Oh.
It was in the Arboricultural Journal, which is printed out of the UK, I think.
Okay.
So what we did is I basically was making an argument that we should maybe look into research and use conifers in the urban area a little bit more.
Hmm.
That was kind of my thesis statement.
Okay.
And I went through a bunch of things to basically say, well, what can they add that another thing doesn't have? And without talking too much about the conifer side of it, which, again, go to our show notes if you want to read through that paper and get some nice rest. Here, today, I wanted to talk a little bit about that diversity thing that we touched on just like 30 seconds ago. So, in general, what is important about diversity, Alex?
In general?
Yeah. Like in the broadest spectrum. Either one, botanically or in, say, human life.
Well, diversity, I can speak more, I'll speak about it botanically.
Okay.
Diversity strengthens an ecosystem.
What a perfect, that was perfect.
And that'll be for humans too.
It does. So the way that I described it, and this comes from a bunch of different researchers as well. So again, go read the paper and you can resume my citations, blah, blah, blah. So, but essentially what it does is diversity increases stability in a system.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what that system is, an ecosystem or another ecosystem that just happens to be a city. So in terms of a natural system, diversity leads to stability, but it leads to it in two specific ways. The first is the ability of that system to withstand disturbance and bounce back from it.
Right. Can I give an example?
Yes.
Okay. So if you have a blight that comes into your forest, that affects only red maples, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your forest is made entirely of red maples.
Yes.
it's going to kill every tree in the forest.
Exactly.
If you have 15% red maples and 15% live oak and 15% ash and 15%, et cetera, et cetera.
Blah, blah, blah.
You're only losing 15% of your trees.
Yes, exactly.
And that, and also that affects every animal who lives in that area.
Oh, sure, yeah,
too,
there's ramifications that kind of come down.
So yeah, the more diverse your forest, the less a harmful entity will be able to affect it.
Exactly. And that, and so the two main things, the first one, the tolerance, is what you're talking about. Like if it just comes in and it's going to smash into it, how good are you at basically stopping and taking that hit, you know?
Right.
Like if someone comes and punches you, how good are you at just like taking that and not like completely falling over? Versus resilience, which is how quickly it can come back to whatever stable system or stable level it was at.
Okay.
So if you get punched, not you, one gets punched.
Thank you.
You get punched. If you just don't move, you have a high resistance or high tolerance.
Mm.
If you move, but then you come right back really quickly, then you have a high resilience. So there's two different big things.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
You know what? I'm going to make a video game analogy. I'm sorry about
Please,
this, Casey.
Dude. What are you talking about?
Well, there's, you know, in an RPG role-playing game, you have different stats or statistics. You might have strength, intellect, or intelligence, agility, stamina.
Sounds a lot like a Tournament of Champion Trees, Alex.
It very well could be. Okay. We should do a video game theme this year. Oh, I would die. So you might have health, stamina, and regen, right?
Yes.
Health is how much health points you have.
Okay.
Stamina might be like how much damage you take from any given hit, like 100% of that damage or 80% of that damage.
Yeah.
Sometimes stamina is the same thing as health. You might have armor, which like blocks some of that damage.
Yeah.
And then you have regen, which is how fast your health regenerates after you get hit.
100%.
So it's one of these things. And you take you go ahead and finish the point.
Basically, your point is having a diversity of those traits. In having a lot or having a diversity of characters that have differences in those traits will make your entire unit stronger.
Or even if I put all of my points into armor and no points into health, I can maybe take a lot of hits, but if I take one too many hits, I'm dead.
You're
instantly.
Done. You're kaput. It's exactly it.
Maybe I think that's, not a great. It's
it
so
is.
So.
I think it does a good job at kind of giving a visual idea in a different format entirely of what we're talking about.
Therefore, for about 3% of our listeners.
Hey, all of them are important to us.
That's right.
Exactly. So diversity in a natural ecosystem is they measure it a lot in production, which is just how much carbon is basically, you know, sucked in or used or produced or something like this. Whereas in the urban forest, we would look at that more properly in terms of ecosystem services.
Right.
So if you do have 15% of your canopy is a red maple disease comes through, kills all of your red maples. Now you have lost 15%. The rest of the forest, the rest of the whole system needs to then make up for that lost 15%. How much and how, or what does it take to get there and how quickly does it get there? To get back to this base level of ecosystem services that it's providing.
I gotcha.
So that is the big diversity thing that people are trying to like accomplish. You want the highest resilience and the highest resistance that you can. And the bigger your diversity, the better you are at doing that. So people have come up with ideas of like, okay, well, what does that look like? And the biggest, most like obvious and like quickest one, the one that all the teachers will have taught over the last like 10 or 15, actually no, since like the 1990s, like 30 years,
whoa,
is the 10-20-30 rule, or they call it the 10% rule.
Okay.
That is in a given selection of forest, like whatever you make those, you know, the brackets around, you want no more than 10% of any species.
Okay.
No more of 20% of any family.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, genus. And 30% the family.
Right.
You get it.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
So yeah, it's a good thing to be like, okay, let's shoot for that. And anytime you are planting something and you're about to reach that number, stop there and move to the next thing. But we've been planting trees in cities for centuries. we didn't really come up with that, or at least it wasn't like published. It was a rule of thumb for a while. Mm-hmm. And then other people like, you know, published, oh, 10% of this, no more than 5% of that. And there's like a lot of these, I think I found like 5 or 6 or 7 different individual numbers that someone came up with at some point with no real like analysis of it. They just said, this is probably good. Now people are going back and saying, well, can we analyze this? Like, what are they trying to say? Is there more or less? Like, what's the empirical data backing this up?
I think quickly we should give the 10, 20, 30 rule again.
Yeah.
Because I like excitedly stammered over you trying to say it.
All right.
In any given urban forest,
yeah,
you want no more than 10% of the same species.
Correct.
20% of the same genus.
Yes.
And 30% of the same family.
Yes. As a representation of all of the plants or all the trees growing there
in terms of diversity.
Exactly.
Got it.
So that's the big main idea. And in my paper, I question that. I'm like, well, that's only diversity in terms of taxonomy. And also you could meet that rule if you had 10 different species and that's it.
Did you have to meet with the board of the ISA like Martin Luther?
Oh, man. I wish. That would have been cool. But no, I didn't. I didn't do as much research as I probably could have to get an attendance at the court. So I didn't. No. But there, the big thing is, I was like, okay, cool. Well, what if we just pick 10 different species and we make those from, so it's 20% of any genus, which means you could have 2 species from one genus,
right?
And that will meet the 10 and the 20% rule. I didn't do it, but if you wanted right now, we could come up with those trees right off the top of my head.
No, let's not.
So, I knew you were going to say that. Hey, why didn't we
just
move
10 minutes
on?
we can use for other things.
And then with the family, it would be just as
Sorry,
easy
Casey.
To do that. That's okay, Alex. I know these things.
People understand what we're saying.
They get us. They get it. So with the families, you only need a total of 4 different families.
Okay, right, yeah.
30, 30, 30, and the last 10% would have to be another family.
Okay.
So
right.
That's a pretty shitty diversity, don't you think? Where we could have 2 maple species, we could have then 2 oak trees, and then so on and so forth. We already have 4 trees that are already well planted and have a huge amount of trees. If we go out and look at the city of Portland and we just pick oaks and maples, we've blasted off. I think it's oaks in Portland. It's maples and cherries or anything in the rose family makes up like 50% of our trees. It's a crazy amount.
I don't know though, okay? I mean, like, you're the researcher. I'm the layman.
Well, yeah, let's talk about it. This is the whole point.
But I think from a practical perspective, that doesn't sound that not diverse.
Mm.
I you know, a forest in the Pacific Northwest can't grow trees that might grow all around the world.
Yeah, that's fair. And like in any given forest, there's probably 10 different species that are growing. Like if you go up near Mount Hood, you can probably find maybe 10 to 15 species of tree, and that's it in the entire forest.
Yeah, I guess that when you frame it like that, it doesn't sound too impressive.
Yeah. Now, but in the East, completely different. There's hundreds of species. Well, maybe there's at least tens of species in any given forest, you know, ecosystem.
Right. This is the land of the Douglas fir.
It is, yeah.
The Douglas fir is king.
Our diversity is very low. But then if we do look back and say with the Asian longhorn beetle, it loves all maples. That could come over here. And with the introduction of the ash borer, that takes all the ash and all the maples right off the top.
Right.
So that could completely destroy us just like that. So it's this broad kind of generalist insect that could come over and cause us a lot of trouble.
Right.
So what I did is I basically said, well, what else? What other kinds of diversity can we do? It doesn't, this 10, 20, 30 rule, it doesn't say that we can, it doesn't encourage diversity. It just puts a limit on certain planting practices. So it puts a top limit, but it doesn't say how many we should have. So it says no more than 10%, but it doesn't say, but you should shoot for 1%, you know?
Oh, okay, sure.
So I would say, well, maybe what if it says, what if you say you should have no more than 10% of any one species, but you should shoot to have 2% of any one species. So that means you have at least 50 different trees across an entire urban forest. And that would then make that, if anything came over and attacked a single species, 2% of your urban forest is going to be affected.
I now am looking at this from the perspective of like a city tree planner.
Yeah.
And they get the notice or whatever. And they're like 10, 20, 30. Huh? That's pretty simple. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Instead of, well, can we get it down to 2?
Yeah. Can we, like, how it's almost a little too simple.
Yeah.
And it happens in the city all the time where people just want to plant the tree that they know. They want them all to be the same. They all want them to look really good and have like really beautiful fall color. Can we just plant maples? Can we just plant 5 maples? And you say, no. And if you say, okay, you can plant 5 maples, then the next person's like, okay, come on, what about me? I just want to plant 5 maples. So it's like, okay, you can do it. And then everyone sees their own space as their own space. But when you're looking at it from a big, larger perspective, all of a sudden, you find that you need this larger, more intense means of analyzing these things. And that is, I think, the big thing that the red maple has kind of like become, where everyone just wants the easiest thing just for themselves. But then if everyone wants it just for themselves and it's all the same thing, your diversity just goes boom, straight to the toilet.
Yeah.
So that is, that's kind of the thing that I've thought about. Alex, that's not even to mention diversity in terms of structure. Like all these trees are shaped the same way.
Ah.
They all grow the same way.
Interesting.
There's no conifers. There's no trees that grow out. There's very few trees that maybe grow exactly straight up.
Right.
There's not a diversity temporally speaking. All of these trees will have the same thing happening at the same time of year. Mm. And there's no diversity and all these other things.
Yeah, interesting.
So all of a sudden, diversity in terms of an urban forest, when you look at, say, a natural forest, you can quantify all these different things, and you can go back there every 2 weeks and say, what's the same, what's different, what's doing something now?
Yeah.
And you can find all these differences in time and space across an entire, you know, ecosystem. So if we look at the city in the same way, all of a sudden, it's like, this tree is a scourge on the earth. Is that the right term? Scourge? Scourge? I think it's scourge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Scourge on the earth, Alex. It is, so this tree for me, and technically speaking, I think the Norway maple actually is the most represented tree in the urban forest in Portland. And in a bunch of other places, because it kind of took over the planting after, what are those guys? Dutch elm disease
9/11.
Came through after 9/11. They only Norway maples. It's the safest tree.
It's the most patriotic tree.
Yeah. So this is a tree that is just, if we could go to everyone and say, Starbucks is causing so many problems in the world. Yes, I know it tastes the way you want it. It's consistent, does the same thing every time. But they also have all these other little problems, and they're killing off the diversity of all the other things that are in this same ecosystem. And they've caused blindness and the issue of convenience to be the more important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good still?
You know what 99% of people would say.
Stop drinking Starbucks.
No.
Stop planting the Starbucks of trees. Alex, I can't say anymore.
Wow. Casey tapped out for the first time ever. Oh my God. It really is a new year. New year, new Casey. Well, Case, let's get into our review. But first, we must take a break. You go get some water, walk around the block, get your hackles down.
Yeah, everyone relax, take some deep breaths.
Go get your Starbucks. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the red maple. It got a little heated. Hey, we got a little red in the face, huh? It's time for our review. If you're new to the show, sorry. This is how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey, as our resident Starbucks-obsessed person?
It's called a barista. Huh?
I wonder if they have Starby. As our resident Starby, we begin with you.
All right. So this tree, as you know, has a special place in my heart.
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse.
We hold on to the traumas that we experience.
God. Yeah. For all the different things. So whenever I was doing an inventory and there would be like a potentially really cool tree, I would see it. And when it turned out to be a red maple, I'd be like, oh,
yeah.
All right. And like, they're just a dime a dozen and they're not the greatest trees, but they also constantly are growing someplace that's like no other tree is going to grow. They're on the level of the sweet gum and the London plane tree and the Norway maple, where it's like wherever it is growing, sometimes it's going to be a great situation and they're going to be doing great. Maybe they're going to be destroying the sidewalk, but they're still doing really well. Maybe they'll be in the middle of downtown Portland. They'll look like they've been locked in this tiny 8x4 foot little rectangle, yet they're doing great.
Right.
They got this massive root system that doesn't make any sense to you at all because it looks like a square plate. I have to give it credit. I have to give this tree credit for withstanding and being able to grow in these worst places. But at the other side of it, my God, if this tree is never planted for the rest of my life, anywhere ever, I will be so happy.
Yeah.
Every time, the city of Portland has a moratorium on planting any maples as street trees.
Wow.
Because we have so many of them. Just between the Norway maple and the red maple, we have something like 20 or 25% of all the trees.
Shit.
And that doesn't even include the silver maples and the sugar maples and the Japanese maples and all the other maples that we have. So it's really like there are too many.
Yeah.
We have to pull that back in because if something does come through, maple disease X, we're doomed. So we're not even allowed to plant them. I believe in it. Whenever I see one planted, I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't be there. And I'll call it in and be like, yeah, you can't plant a red maple. Can't believe it. Can't do it. So 3.1, this tree needs to go. Its time is done. It is time to find the boutique tree that makes the most sense, but actually has some artisan qualities to it. That's what we need.
We need a spiritual successor to the red maple.
Exactly. And this tree does not, which we have, I should be very clear. We've covered 20 or 30 of them just on this show, I'm sure. For in terms of diversity of everything we talked about.
Sure.
So this tree needs to go.
All right.
It needs to go. I don't think I'm going to really hurt its feelings if I say, stop planting the red maple because it's the most common tree in all the forests of the entire eastern half of North America.
Right.
So I don't think that this tree is going to be like, but my space.
It doesn't give a shit about you.
It doesn't give a shit.
If you want to get the red maple out of circulation and the fall of the red maple set it into motion, I think giving it a low cone score is the best way to start the ball rolling.
I agree, Alex. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I can't explain to you how much confidence I have in our reviews changing the world.
Yeah. 3.1. Okay.
Yeah. I have a 3.1 golden cones of honor for the red maple. I know you see this tree with a different eye.
Slightly, Casey. Okay, not too much. I have one fond memory of the red maple.
Oh, tell us.
As a child, I believe we had one in our backyard.
Uh-huh.
And I would take the young twigs, which were red.
Yeah.
And kind of strip the paper thin bark off of them and make little bracelets.
Oh, that is actually really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally support that.
However, I'm not one for nostalgia. So that does not play into my cone score today.
Okay.
With fresh eyes learning about the red maple, I don't really care about it, but I definitely think from what I've heard, it's completely overplanted. And now that we've talked about it, I will see them everywhere.
Yeah.
The same way I did the ginkgo, but I love
exactly.
The ginkgo.
So
it's a little, much. I'm going to give it a 2.
Oh, yes. That's what I'm talking about, Alex.
That's also said with like shrugged shoulders. Like, I don't really care about this tree.
That is so, so refreshing.
I'll just give it, I'll toss it a 2 from across the room.
Yeah, there you go, kid.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even say anything to it. Just good. Here you go.
Yeah.
I said that in my head.
I feel good.
So a 2 and a 3.1, we average out to about 2.6 or so.
Sounds about right.
That's rough, Case.
Yeah.
First tree of the year.
First tree of the year.
Quite a doozy. That was our review of the Red Maple. Casey, it's time for a game.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
It's time for a game with a little bit of a twist.
Oh.
This is Who Can It Tree Now? 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 All right, Casey, here's how this game usually works. Excuse me. I will pick a tree from the Sibley Guide to Trees by David Allen Sibley.
Yep.
Our canonical god, if we had one.
It is.
Our canonical god. This is the Bible. And I will give you 20 questions, was it, or 10 questions?
It's 20, I believe.
Okay, about...
I think it's 20.
Okay, I think it's 10.
Okay, let's go 10. I think it's 10.
10 questions about the tree to narrow it down, and then you, after your 10th question, have to guess the tree that I'm thinking of.
Yep.
However, today, I will be in the role of the guesser, and you will be the one choosing the tree.
That's right.
So I'm going to toss you this book.
Okay, I'm going to catch it. Whoa!
Nice frisbee skills.
Thank you. I've been practicing.
So, Casey, you go ahead and choose a tree from the David Sibley Book of Trees.
Yes, sir.
I will get 20 questions.
10.
10 questions.
I thought you were just trying to trick me right then.
No, just poor memory.
All right.
I'll mark them down.
Here we go.
Have you found the tree?
I have. I have found the tree. I am ready when you are.
Okay. My first question. Is this... It'll still be interesting to see the difference between the questions you ask and the questions I ask.
Yes. Okay. I think that's also a very curious... thing.
I can see the book.
Sorry.
I didn't see anything, but
okay,
I could.
Good.
Is this a conifer?
No.
It's one question.
And this is all yes or no questions.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Is this a broadleaf tree?
Yes.
If you chose the red maple.
No, but I don't think that's an actual question.
No. Does this tree grow naturally in the Pacific Northwest?
No.
Okay. A broadleaf tree that maybe grows in the East.
Yes.
That was not a question.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I found a loophole.
Yeah. What? Oh my God.
Would you categorize this tree? Say that the yes or no. Would you categorize this tree as a big tree?
Yes.
Okay. Is this an oak tree?
No.
Fuck. Okay. I was gonna ask. I'm not asking this.
Okay. All right.
I was gonna ask. Is this tree oppositely or alternately ranged?
Yeah. Okay.
But I would not know what to do with that information if I had it.
Dang.
Unfortunately, okay. Maybe we can talk about that.
Yeah. But I don't know what to do.
I'd be like, God. Okay, great.
All right.
Now I know that. Is this a deciduous tree?
That is affirmative.
Okay. Damn, I've already asked 6 questions.
Yeah.
It's a deciduous tree that grows in the East.
Mm-hmm.
It's a broadleaf deciduous tree that grows in the East.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it a maple?
No.
Oh, it's not a maple or an oak.
Nope.
Shit. Is it a tree whose wood is widely revered by the woodworking community?
No.
Wow.
No.
Okay. So it's an Eastern broadleaf deciduous tree, a big tree.
Yeah.
And the woodworking community is not all that crazy about it.
They're not all crazy about it.
Is there a European version of this tree?
Yes. That's a good question.
Thanks.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Whew, I got one more question.
Ooh.
Well, I already asked, does it grow here naturally? Is it planted here?
Yes.
That's 10.
That's 10, Alex.
I must now guess.
You must now guess or start having negative questions.
I end up with negative 30 questions.
Yeah.
I think I have a guess.
Is it not this tree?
I have a couple guesses. Can I start with one?
Yeah.
Is it the European beach?
It is not the European beach.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. I'll give you three good good guesses.
Okay, great. My next one, is it the European hornbeam?
It is not the European hornbeam.
Okay, great. And it's not the larch.
Nope.
Because it's a broadleaf tree.
It's a broadleaf tree, correct. You got that right.
European.
Also, just in case it, we're already beyond it, but if you did ask if it's alternate or opposite,
yeah,
it's alternate, so it would not have been a significant reducer in terms of the options that you get. It would take away literally, I think, only maples so far of what you've said.
Oh, okay.
All the other ones would have been viable answers.
It's not an oak and it's not a maple.
Yeah. Nor is it a beech or a hornbeam.
Right. European... And it grows on the East Coast.
Yep.
And it's a big... people are screaming at me right now. I can just feel it.
Maybe. You have not narrowed it down significantly.
No?
No.
What would be a really big narrow downer question?
You haven't asked about the fruit or the flower.
Oh, shit. Damn it. Does it eat an edible...
I'll give you four more questions.
All right, great. Does it grow an edible fruit?
No.
Wow. Does it have, would you call its flower a utility flower?
No. I mean, you could, but I think in this case, no.
Would you say that its leaves, I haven't asked about the leaves.
No.
Are its leaves simple or compound?
These are simple leaves. Got two more.
And it's the European version. It's not necessarily the European version, but it has a European version.
Yes, I will be honest. I actually, there are two different, or there's several different versions of this tree. Mm-hmm. I decided if you just get the general version of it, that you would get it correct. Because initially I started thinking I'm going to do the European version.
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, but that's not unfair, or that's a little unfair because this is specifically a North American book.
Sure.
So then I switched over to the American version. They're very similar except for like a very specific difference.
Whoa.
But that's what, so they're all the questions, if you just get them all right, you'll get the tree.
Oh,
if you continue down, all but like a very particular question would set them apart, other than where do they grow.
Can I use my third guess?
Yeah.
Is it the Southern Magnolia?
It is not the Southern Magnolia. Southern Magnolia is evergreen. You know that this is a deciduous tree.
Right.
You still have two more questions and one final guess.
Okay. What did you say about a utility flower?
It does not have a utility flower.
Okay.
So I don't want to fill in what that would mean. You said, does it have a utility flower? I said, no.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Do animals eat the fruit?
I think they... I betcha... not really. Oh, I lost my place.
So it's not the American chestnut.
No, it is not. I'm not responding to that.
Fuck. Casey, I think I'm out of ideas.
Uh-oh.
It's a horrendous failure.
Well, you have one more question.
One more question. Okay.
Because you've asked your three of your additional four.
Does the
which we found laying right over here. They were just covered. So you had them the whole time.
Let me check the rule book. You said there was a very specific difference between the American and the European versions of this tree.
Yeah.
Is that difference in the fruit?
No.
My final guess is this.
Before you go too far,
uh-huh.
You can ask whatever next thing you want to ask. But uh-huh. Alex, go through what you've got so far.
Okay. It is a broadleaf, big broadleaf deciduous tree.
Yeah.
That grows on the East Coast.
Yes.
This is the American version of... There's an American and there's a European version.
Yeah.
It does not have an edible or notable fruit.
Uh-huh.
It does not have it does not have utility flowers, which we're using to mean, like, the reason I chose magnolia and forgot about the deciduousness was that it has, like, a statement flower.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's my way of asking, does this have a statement flower?
And I think that, yes, you're on the right, you're on the right track there. Although, I have to admit, I don't know if you're thinking of the right statement.
Well, the Bradford pear.
Oh, no, it's not the Bradford pear. Dang it. Oh, man, I was hoping.
You thought I knew it. All right, Casey, well, I lost that round. What is the tree?
This is Tilia Americana, the American linden.
I would never in a billion fucking years have gotten that.
That's why I was hoping you'd just say linden. I think you could have. I made sure to choose a tree that we'd covered, which was the actual little leaf linden, which is the variety. So that's why I was like, wow, well, this may have been a bunk because I ended up choosing not the best tree for the given situation. But all the things you asked were correct. The thing that separates them is the one we covered has little leaves. The one that's American has bigger leaves.
Got it.
That's pretty much it.
Well, you can't win them all. That was Who Can a Tree
you
Now?
You can't win them all.
And now it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week's question is from the Patreon. If you want to submit a question for the mainline episodes, patreon.com/arbitrarypod and join the Q&A tier. That's Quercus and Alder tier. This one's from Jade Walker. Hi, guys. Hi,
Hello,
Jade.
Hello, Jade.
My question is probably more about perception than trees.
Oh, my gosh.
I have Sibley's Guide to Trees.
Okay.
The reason I chose this is because
this one right here.
It's literally in your hand.
Okay.
But I have yet to identify any tree using it.
Oh.
Am I looking at the illustrations correctly, or am I expecting too much from this guide?
Interesting.
For example, I was told that the tree that I can see from my townhouse is a river birch, but when I look in the guide, I can't really see the resemblance. Thanks, Jade.
Oh, interesting.
I have some direct familiarity with this problem.
Yeah, well, begin.
In my experience, you can only, I mean, yes, you can tell, like, there's a spectrum here. If I pick up a cone from the ground in front of a tree,
yeah,
and it's a Douglas fir cone.
Yeah.
I know that the tree above me is a Douglas fir.
Yeah, but at least you have an idea that it might be.
Or I can see other Douglas fir cones on it, right?
Okay, yeah. That's the clue.
Yeah, that's like a super easy way, right?
Yeah.
If I walked up to, I don't know, a London plane tree, and I had the book in front of me.
Yeah.
I was like, the leaves kind of look like that. Yeah, the bark kind of looks like that. My experience is that even trees of the same species do not look exactly alike for the most part.
Yeah.
They might have, you know, extremely similar flowers, or there might be like one thing that's like really notable. And I'm talking about from a beginner's perspective here.
Yeah. I think I get you. Yeah.
As I am, and I'm assuming Jade is, but I don't want to assume their level of expertise in trees, expert trees. When I started trying to identify plants from a guide.
Yeah.
I kind of like, I don't know. It wasn't really like clicking with me all that much.
Yeah. Honestly, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
And it's one of these things where, what did you call when you go through Netflix? Analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I think is happening. And it happens, I think, way more often than anyone really gives it credit for when you're trying to identify plants, which is probably why a lot of people are like, I'm not even going to start. I'm not even going to try.
Sure.
So that's one of my biggest issues with this guide specifically.
And can I interject to say,
please,
yesterday I saw a sweet little bird out my window.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to try to identify that bird.
Ah, nice.
And I grabbed my Sibley bird guide.
Yeah.
Because that's where it's all started, funny enough.
Right.
It's a great guide. It's just like the tree guide, but with birds.
Yeah, beautifully. Everything's done well. Yeah,
it's amazing. And I like got it in my hands and I was like, I don't even know where to start.
Yes.
Like, you have to know that that's a duck in order to go to the ducks and exactly. try to find what it looks like, right?
It's exactly right. And that is one of the biggest downfalls to the Sibley Guide, is it has everything listed in the botanical kind of way,
yeah.
but it doesn't give you it in an analytical kind of way, where what they call it generally is a dichotomous key. Hmm. And that's a key that literally says, is it like this? Or is it like this?
Oh.
And they use big, broad, general terms, and they get down to very specific terms as you narrow down and narrow away other things.
Who can it tree now?
Exactly. That is, whenever I do who can it tree now, except for maybe the first time, I was like, oh my God, I just need to ask yes or no questions and try to ask them from the biggest, widest yeah. spaces down to the most specific. That way you can, you know, put these a structure to what your brain is thinking as you're going down.
That's why when I asked, is it oppositely or alternatively arranged, you said, well, it won't really help. It won't narrow it down that much now.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's a high level question.
Exactly.
That breaks it into two bigger categories.
Precisely.
Okay.
And it just so happens in North America, those categories, even though they are two big categories, one is like 10% and the other is 90% of what's left. And so there's so many more alternate trees than there are opposite trees. So in this case, you get all the different answers. They're inside this book, but they may not give you a way to find that answer. They're all listed right. there, but they're all kind of, for all intents and purposes, randomly scattered through there. Unless you know it's an oak, like you said, you got to know it's a duck to go to the duck section. Once you know it's an oak, you can go to the oak section and read through it. And then if you just look at the pictures, you can be like, oh yeah, okay, it looks like this oak more than that oak. So I bet you it's going to be this one.
And Jade's specific problem, that the river birch outside yeah. their townhouse, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't really match up all that much with the tree in the book.
Right.
I chalk that up to the fact that even among species, there is visual diversity.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty accurate, but it also is a question of what are you looking at? And what's important about that, sorry, I'm just navigating to it so I can see it.
There are like, you know, in any given species, I feel like there are certain identifiers that are more useful than others.
Exactly, yeah. And some trees are different when they're young as compared to when they're old. And it also, right. you need some means of saying 100% one way or the other, like what a key would do. So, for instance, I tell this whenever I'm teaching people how to identify trees, a lot of them would just walk up to the tree and just kind of look at it. And I'm like, you got to talk to yourself. Say, okay, what does the leaf look like? Mm. And then describe the leaf to yourself out loud. Like, okay, it's a single leaf. It's alternately arranged. It's coming down on this side over here. Oh, but it has a base that's a little offset. That immediately is like, oh, there's a clue.
Yeah.
Then you say, oh, well, it has the serrations along the edges. Aha, okay, another clue.
Wait, I know this tree.
Exactly. And then you start going down. Then all of a sudden, as you narrow it down, you start saying, oh, what? Okay, birches should have these little fruits that are on there. Then you start looking for that fruit. The problem is once you don't see that fruit, you're like, oh, okay, so maybe this isn't a birch. Could not be a birch, could be a tree that actually is just not old enough to be putting on that fruit. Also, it could be a cultivar that doesn't have fruit, you know? So it kind of gets a little weird, unfortunately. So the thing that I would recommend is the best way to do it is you gotta first start with knowing what trees are in an area. So if this is a river birch, then the thing that I would do is I'd look through this guide, find river birch, and say, okay, there it is. It looks like a river birch. What am I looking for a river birch? And I would read through all the different things. Deciduous, medium to large tree, usually under 60 feet, but often to 80. And then look at all the specificities of the leaf and the bark.
Mm-hmm.
And then be able to say, okay, yeah, I think this is a river birch. Then I would also look it up online. And I'd say, okay, what does a river birch look like? Let me get some pictures of it at different times of year. Let me look at the twigs. Let me look right. at the leaves, the fall color, the winter form, things like that. And really do the, okay, I think it's this. Now I'm going to go research that to see if it's in case or in fact the case.
Sure. I would like to propose an alternative solution.
Yeah, please.
Maybe the person who told Jade that this is a river birch was just wrong.
That is also the final thing.
Yeah.
To be like, this is not, that can't be. But then, of course, that throws you to a whole other mess because now you're like, well, if it's not a river birch, is it even a birch?
Right.
If it's not a birch, then what kind of tree is it?
Kind of start over.
Yeah, and then you got to know more specifics about trees, which again, the Sibley guide is great, but you got to start knowing what you're looking for so you can look for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's not in the Sibley guide, you're like, okay, then it's probably not a native tree to North America. So then you're like, well, what non-native trees do they plant in my area at this point in time? And then it's like, well, who the hell knows?
Sure.
Which is why, please don't copy me, anybody. I think that people need to have guides for urban trees of their area. So for Portland and for the Pacific Northwest, we can plant hundreds of different species of trees in our streets, in our yards, but the Sibley guide's pretty useless for most of those because many of them are Asian species. Many of them are trees that do grow in the East, but they look a lot like five other trees that grow in the East. So when you're looking through here, you're like, oh, this looks like a pagoda oak. Cool, there's a pagoda oak here. And then you tell that to someone and everyone's like, nobody plants pagoda oak around here. That's completely crazy. That's certainly a scarlet oak. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess it must be a scarlet oak. And then now you're like, well, you can't figure out why, and now you're kind of lost still. And the only piece of information you needed to know is that nobody plants a scarlet oak. Same thing with Pacific silver fir and any other fir. That's a native tree to the Pacific Northwest. You go out to the mountains over in the Cascades, you're going to see Pacific silver fir above 2,000 feet, below 4,000 feet, all over the place. But you'll almost never find them growing down in the city. Nobody plants them. And if they do, that's the only one that's ever been planted. So it's one of those things that's like, if you know, if you can get all the native species guides of all the world, and you'll never be able to tell what tree's planted in front of your yard, because even if it is a native tree, nobody plants it. If it's not a native tree, well, then what the fuck kind of tree is it?
Interesting.
So I don't know if we've really answered Jade's question.
Yeah, I've given you some options there.
Yeah, yeah. But the big thing that I would do is see if you can find a local guide or a horticultural guide to say what trees are planted here, and then go through. And unfortunately, you might have to wait till wintertime. I'm sorry, till springtime, so you can actually see the leaves and really, really take a good look.
That's another thing, yeah.
Wintertime ID is really hard unless you really know what you're looking for and you're confident in all those little clues.
Right.
So this, if you can, go online, look up the river birch, find a bunch of really intense pictures of the bud, the bark, the fruit, things like that, and then do your calculations on it.
There you go.
And check multiple different sources.
Not just your friend.
Yeah, not just your friend's sibling.
Your friend. I'm putting that in air quotes.
Yeah, please.
I'm kidding.
And now the reason, so everyone's like, well, why do you guys always tout this book? It's because if you are able to actually know, kind of have a good starting spot, and you can say, okay, I'm pretty sure this is a river birch, or I'm pretty sure it's a birch, which one is it?
Right.
You can go through and kind of read. And it's really good at all the native trees across the United States. So if you take this from forest A to forest B, anywhere in the United States, it's probably going to give you the right tree. I've used this up and down the coast of the West Coast, all across the United States, and it's consistently been a good measure of what is this tree that's growing here. But as soon as you take it to a horticultural level, this book is completely inadequate. You got to have other things that come in that help you narrow down trees that shouldn't be naturally necessarily growing there, because this is focused on what's naturally growing there. Because what he's doing is saying, this bird is in this kind of forest with these trees. So here's how you identify that kind of forest and those trees. That's why it's a Sibley guide to trees.
There you have it.
There you go. So I'm sorry, Jade. I feel bad.
Thank you so much for your question, Jade. If you have a question for us, I've already said all this. Join the Patreon, the Quercus Knowler tier. That's $3 a month. Or you can join the Arboretum at $5 a month and get 2 bonus episodes about other related topics and trees.
That's exactly right. Alex, there's another couple episodes. We got a lot of things planned. We spent planning time the other day.
That's right, yeah.
And we also included things that we're going to talk about with the Patreon. So we got a lot of fun, exciting new things. And we also noted that our Patreon, our extra bonus content, it's not just what we cut out from the show.
No, it's its own thing.
Exactly. We talk about something completely different. And you'll also have access to the last 2 years worth of all of our content. So it's a very good thing to join us. Only $5 a month. And on top of that, you get 15% off at our store.
That's right. Or you can join the coveted Cone of the Month Club. I would say our flagship tier.
Agreed.
Every month you'll receive a unique die-cut cone sticker from a different species, illustrated by an independent artist. Every month in your inbox with a little info card. Every envelope licked by Casey Clapp.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the big selling point.
It really is.
Or you can join Arbitrary Plus, our new live stream tier, and get 2 live streams a month. One from Casey and I, where we talk about a host of things and interact with you in the chat. We're going to be doing a Zoom call pretty soon here to really be able to talk to you. And then one of me streaming a plant or tree themed or nature themed video game, which I've really been enjoying. Just like a fun, cozy night hanging out with me and Casey.
Yeah, exactly. You can talk about whatever it is. We usually are quite free and open.
Yeah.
But we also have one other level, generous admission, if you really are looking to come in and just support the show, get more really cool things happening. That's where you can basically help us out at whatever level it is that you want to help us out.
There you go. Casey Clapp.
Alex, we did it again.
We've done it again.
We've done it again, and we'll be back next week.
This hour... Hey, you know what? We are just about to hit our 2 year anniversary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Making this show.
Funny enough, it's on January 6th.
Oh, that's right.
I remember. I remember doing a recording that day, and that was the big day that everything came out. So, I think to Allie Ward, she said today is Arbitrary Day.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not a great look.
No.
Hey, thank you everybody for listening for 2 whole years. If you're new here, welcome. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we got plenty more to come. Casey Clapp, thank you so much for your friendship and your partnership with this podcast.
Alex Croson, right back at you. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.